This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld, and I'm sitting in for Tony this week. This past week, in a move that won't be a surprise to anyone, it's being reported that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees is considering, quote, alternative ways to admit more Syrian refugees into the United States. This action would go beyond the current refugee resettlement program. FBI Director James Comey has already stated that the federal government does not have the ability to conduct thorough background checks on Syrian refugees, much less if the UN is trying to find a back door to the system. What national security threat does this pose to the United States? He's the former U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador John Bolton.
Ambassador, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I know you keep your eye on what the United Nations is doing, especially what's been happening in the Middle East. What do you make of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees reportedly looking for alternative ways to get more Syrian refugees into the United States?
Well, I think it's outrageous, frankly. I think it's a statement of what his responsibilities are and overreach in what those responsibilities should be. Look, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees has an important humanitarian mission to provide assistance and protection for refugees. That does not include finding ways to resettle them in countries without some assurance to the country involved that country is not going to be endangered. The United States has an outstanding humanitarian record on refugee questions. We have nothing to be ashamed of. And I think we should continue to provide assistance given the chaos in the Middle East. But again, for us, that doesn't mean that we have to admit people that we're simply unable to screen effectively. And I think you quite rightly indicated what the FBI director said. Others have said essentially the same thing. So that this is a matter that really for the UN to take it on itself to try and evade the responsibilities that the U.S. government has to protect our citizens, I just find it a very disturbing overreach on their part.
Well, Ambassador, there's no one, I think, questioning the fact that we have a humanitarian crisis when you have nearly a half million Syrian refugees that they need to resettle over the next 3 years. But they have to be safely assimilated in. And are we not justified in having safety concerns about those coming into this country not properly vetted, given what's happened in Europe?
Absolutely. And, you know, it has been, up until now, standard refugee doctrine that the best thing to do for refugees is to return them to their country of origin at the first opportunity, whether it's from they became refugees because of natural disasters or war, insurrection, that sort of thing. The preferred solution is not to take them to another country. Now, it may be some time before refugees from Syria can, in fact, return there. And that's, as you say, what we have done to provide assistance to the refugees in the camps. But it's important to consider that many of the people considered to be fleeing from the conflict in Syria are not from Syria at all. They're from all over North Africa, the Middle East, and I understand why they would rather be somewhere else, but that doesn't qualify them legitimately as refugees. I just wonder if the UN officials are not reflecting perhaps what they're hearing from officials in the Obama administration, saying we've got roadblocks on what we can do in terms of accepting refugees, granting them temporary asylum. Maybe you can help us with some other ways, as I think the UN is doing in Europe, which has its own refugee crisis.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you about that, Ambassador Bolton, because the way they're going about this sounds so Obamian, in that they're talking about, really, this is a rhetorical approach to this, that we're not calling them refugees. We're looking for alternative ways. We may call them students with scholarships, or we may call them extended family, or we call them something other than refugees to basically skirt the law.
No, that's exactly right. The Congress itself is very involved in setting the annual limits for the acceptance of refugees in the United States. And I would say, in the case of the conflict in the Middle East, there are populations that have been subject to genocide by ISIS, Christians, Yazidis, and others, that I hope we can screen and grant refugee status to. And that would be consistent with the humanitarian record we've established. But what the UN is talking about goes way, way beyond that. And this idea that you can fiddle with the numbers, evade congressional limits, and just generally bring in people into this country who have not gone through the kinds of background checks that that even illegal immigrants go through before they come in. So I think this is something Congress should be all over. I'd like to see some hearings on this. Let's get these facts out and see what they reveal in full.
Well, you mentioned, Ambassador Bolton, the Yazidis and the Christians who have been the subject of many nations, and now including our own, recognizing that they've been the subject of a targeted genocidal effort. But yet when we look at these Syrian refugee numbers, as they're coming in, the Christians are a very, very, very minute percentage of those coming into the country.
Yes, that's right. And one of the reasons for that that people should understand is that the Christians are afraid to go into the existing refugee camps in Turkey along the Syrian border, which is the only place that the UN High Commissioner for Refugee officials are to screen them. So it's precisely because the camps are infiltrated with terrorists and sympathizers to ISIS that the Christians and Yazidis and others don't want to expose themselves to even graver danger. I think this is a subject that the membership of the UN should be concerned about, because it means if these facts are correct, and there's reason to believe they are, that UNHCR is failing in its critical mission of providing protection and assistance to people who really are refugees.
And that underscores the concern that members of Congress and others have expressed about those refugees coming into this country from those refugee camps and this potential security threat that they pose to this nation.
Yeah, very definitely. And, you know, just a few days ago, the Obama administration's own Director of National Intelligence, General Clapper, said that in the case of Europe, there's no doubt in his mind that the refugee flows have brought in terrorist cells from ISIS. They're now in France and Germany and other countries, posing a grave danger in Europe. And I just have to believe that ISIS is employing the same methods to get its people into the United States under the guise of being refugees.
Ambassador, one final question. I thank you for joining us this afternoon. But one final question for you. Given that the desire that America has long had to be a compassionate nation to help those who are in need, but also at the same time wanting to provide security and protection for our own citizens. Can we do both in this case?
Yes, I think we can. I think it's important that Congress hold the administration's feet to the fire here and to focus on the people who are truly qualified for refugee status. These are people who have a well-founded fear of persecution on the basis of religion or ethnicity or something like that if they're returned to their country of origin. And we've described the Christians and Yazidis and others who clearly meet that qualification. Focus on them first and provide food and shelter and medical attention for the people in the refugee camps. I think that we're doing more to help the refugees now than any other country in the camps in the region, and we should certainly continue to do that. But the government has to bear in mind its principal responsibility is the protection of innocent Americans.
Absolutely, without question. Ambassador John Bolton, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks again for having me. Always glad to do it.
You can find out more about Ambassador Bolton when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, Representative Diane Black joins us to talk about problems at AmeriCorps. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, sitting in for FRC President Tony Perkins. The forced partnership between U.S. taxpayers and abortion continues, this time with a different culprit, AmeriCorps. According to a report by the Office of Inspector General, released on Monday, and I quote, between 2013 and 2015, the National Association of Community Health Centers, Bethesda, Maryland, allowed a few AmeriCorps members to provide emotional support or doula care to women during abortion procedures at three New York City clinics operated by the Institute for Family Health, a sub-grantee, end quote. That means that once again, the left has found a way to take your hard-earned money and use it to provide abortions. Thankfully, members of Congress are already all over this case. Member of the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, the representative from the 6th Congressional District of Tennessee, Diane Black, joined Tony on Wednesday.
Diane, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
I saw your statement, and you were outraged by this report from the Inspector General that an organization that's been receiving government money is now being a part of the whole abortion industry.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, this just breaks my heart because I believe so much in the work that is done in the community health centers, and they do good work. And so a few of these, and we don't know how many, and that's the reason why we're calling for a deeper investigation, but they've not only broken the rules, but they broke a trust with the American people, and that, as you know, is a sad thing when you break a trust. Now, we're not going to trust any of them because of what has been done in these three. But what really does disappoint me is this goes back quite a way, and I was unaware of this, goes back to 2011. And this particular case is 2013. And there were leaders there who knew about this, that didn't come forward, didn't acknowledge that this was done, and take action to fire those who were breaking the law and hold them accountable and to let this go. And so there are a lot of pieces of this that are really worrisome.
And one of the concerning aspects of this, Congresswoman, is the fact that in the wake of the Planned Parenthood scandal, many have been advocating that the money going to Planned Parenthood be redirected to these community health care centers who have been held up as those not engaging in abortion and simply providing those vital health care services, when in fact now we know that's not the case in all of these clinics.
And Tony, once again, I'm really very disappointed in this because once you break a trust and you look at one center or three centers that we know of from this report that were involved in this illegal action, it then colors what is being done in other clinics that are doing the right thing and that are giving comprehensive women's health care services. So this is just very, very disturbing, and it's the reason why I believe we have to get to the bottom of this. And we have to make sure that it really is an isolated situation, and then we have to hold people accountable that have broken the law.
Right. As you point out, this is a violation of federal law, existing law. This is not just
an issue
of preference or politics. This is the law that was stated that they cannot cross that line. And in this case, as the Inspector General has reported, they have. Now, if Congress investigates this, verifies that this information is true, what type of actions might be taken?
And I don't know the complete answer to that, but it is a law. And as I have referenced before, when you break a law, you need to be held accountable. And we're going to be looking into that more closely. I know that my colleague, Tom Cole, has written a letter to ask for more deep investigation on this. And as we work through this, we'll see how we can hold these people accountable and responsible. And we must do that.
I would think at a minimum, if there are clinics that are violating the law, that they would lose their funding that comes from the federal government if, in fact, they're violating federal law.
Well, that would be one of the measures that you might take. You may also, the individual that directed these young women to do this, to be involved in it, especially the clinic that was actually doing abortions in the clinic.
I
think that, to me, rises to the highest level of penalty. And that might be just what you do, is just close them down, because I'm not sure you can trust them again if you're not looking. And what they did a number of years ago and continued, we don't even really know how many times they may have performed abortions in their clinic, even beyond what we have found out through the Inspector General report.
Right. I mean, there's bound to be more information. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Congresswoman Diane Black, I know you have to go make a speech. One final question for you. Given the policies of this administration, the Obama administration, how they have promoted abortion and tried to push that agenda every place that it can, do you think this is just a part of that overall push by this administration to try to push their abortion-driven agenda?
Well, certainly, I don't want to speculate when I don't know for sure, but obviously, in every way that this administration has been able to push the agenda of abortion and not make this an issue of life, to acknowledge this is a baby, in every way that they talk about it, they don't value life, and I don't know how much they may have known or didn't know, because I don't have that information, so it's not up to me to make that decision on whether that's really what has occurred here. But I certainly would be suspicious about this administration and their desire to just have abortion free and ready anytime that anybody wants abortion on demand is something that they are very promoting of.
Well, hopefully we'll find out with Congress asking the right questions. We'll get to the bottom of that. Congresswoman Diane Black, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony, for having me.
When you go to TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about Representative Black and the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives. When the weekend edition of Washington Watch continues, Tony has a few thoughts on one way the Department of Justice is injecting politics into the education process. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Have you ever tried to find data on marriage or religion but didn't know where to find it? The Marriage and Religion Research Institute has just released an online social science encyclopedia. It's called Maripedia. Maripedia provides data on all matters related to family, marriage, religion, and sexuality. It is an important resource for anyone who wants to become an informed player in improving society. Visit Maripedia.org today to access this faith-affirming research. That's Maripedia.org.
And welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday of this week, Tony took a few minutes during his daily Washington Watch Live radio program to talk about the recent discovery that the Department of Justice is injecting its politics into the policies of schools of higher education. Here's Tony Perkins with his thoughts.
All right, what we've seen happening here with the Department of Justice under the Obama administration is that, first off, they've done very little to uphold the rule of law. whether it's Fast and Furious, which led to the previous attorney general under President Obama being held in contempt of Congress for refusing to provide the information due Congress, or we had the IRS releasing confidential taxpayer information and the Department of Justice refusing to prosecute, or we see what has happened with local law enforcement across the country where they've basically incited the public against law enforcement, again, undermining the rule of law. But it could be that they just were simply too busy to uphold the rule of law with their activities of bullying schools across the country to change their bathroom and locker policies to ensure that kids can pick which one they want to use regardless of their biological sex. We've seen this in Virginia. We've seen it in Illinois. The Department of Justice threatening to send in the troops under their authority of Title IX, the Educational Amendments of 1972, which gives the federal government, Department of Justice, Office of Civil Rights, the ability to investigate discrimination. Well, that's become a catch-all under this administration. And so now the Department of Justice, not content with harassing high schools and elementary schools across the country, they're now going to college campuses. And this is where I go back to where I started, how classic, well, I shouldn't say classic, but it's typical big government in that you create a problem so you can solve it. Now, there is, you look at this administration and the policies of this administration, the military, well, everywhere, they have sexualized everything. The military, and here's another good example, and it's quantifiable. When you look at the military and first repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, then women in frontline combat units, and you know the list goes on, and all of a sudden they're shocked at the increase in sexual assault in the nation's military. And they, oh, well, we've got to do something about that. And so they want to exert more control over military commanders. And they spend all of the time, instead of training to confront and defeat an enemy, they spend time in a classroom talking about, you know, how they should make each other feel good. And they got to be careful about offending people because, you know, they have to be sensitized. And all of this stuff pertaining to sexual assault, sexual abuse, when they themselves, through their policies, have interjected sex into everything. Everything. And then they act as if they're shocked that we have these increased incidents of sexual assault. And by the way, in the military, the lion's share, or I should say a majority, they've seen a huge increase in the sexual assaults, and it's male on male. Now, you don't hear that reported in the media because it doesn't fit the left's narrative. But it goes to show you, it tracks right back to the policies of this administration. And they would say, well, we've just increased awareness and therefore reporting has gone up. No, your policies have created this environment where everything is sexual. I mean, think about it. For the last month, the discussion nationally has been about bathrooms in North Carolina. Typically, we hear, well, that's because conservatives, that's all they want to talk about is social issues, social issues. And no, I don't think so. It's not the Republicans that interjected this into the discussion. It was the Democratic mayor of Charlotte, just as was the Democratic mayor of Houston, that forced this policy through to invade and violate the privacy of American citizens in under their jurisdictions using restroom facilities and locker rooms. So now the Department of Justice wants to take this onto college campuses. They say because of their Title IX authority, they can now begin to address this discrimination that's happening on campuses. Now it starts with going in regards to sexual assault cases. It's interesting, just yesterday, I think, or it was maybe 2 days ago, a Georgia state representative, in his private capacity, actually has filed suit against the Department of Justice for this very policy that they're, or this initiative that the Department of Justice is taking on college campuses. Because essentially what it does is it makes one guilty before they have an opportunity to have all the evidence heard and seen. It allows, for instance, someone makes an allegation against someone for some type of sexual discrimination or offense, and you're essentially guilty until you prove yourself innocent. Now, that's just the camel's nose under the tent. The rest of the agenda is to bring in the transgender bathrooms, because that's discrimination. This administration is absolutely unbelievable. They will stop at nothing. Folks, the next 8 months are probably going to be some of the most dangerous times this country has ever faced. Because this president wants to ensure that he completes what he started. Remember that? Remember what he said? We want to fundamentally transform America. And he's going to spend every moment doing that. We cannot take our eye off of this administration and this president for a single moment. In fact, the closer we get to waving goodbye to the president lifting off in his helicopter off the lawn of the White House, and I'll be there to wave. The closer we get to that moment, the closer we've got to pay attention to what he's doing in this administration, the rules, the regulations, and what he's doing at so many different levels, on so many different levels of this administration.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.